When local elites decided to erect a new port on a river southeast of Calcutta, weather scientist Henry Piddington sent them a stern warning. "Everyone and everything must be prepared to see a day," he wrote, "when in the midst of the horrors of a hurricane, they will find a terrific mass of salt water rolling in or rising up upon them with such rapidity that the whole settlement will be inundated to a depth from 5 to 15 feet." The warning was ignored. The port was built with banks, hotels, a railway station, and grand public buildings. 3 years after its inauguration, a cyclone struck along with a storm surge and swept the city away. The unthinkable had happened. The year was 1867. Writer and environmentalist Amitav Ghosh recounts this anecdote in his 2016 book, called The Great Derangement. Ghosh claims it as an early example of people's failure to grasp and prevent the catastrophic, the unthinkable. What Ghosh means by the Great Derangement is our modern-day collective inability to take the measures needed to avert the existential threat of global warming. To explain this profound failure to save our own skins, Ghosh explores human ways of thinking as they are shaped by literature, history, and politics. In the first of three essays that comprise the book, Ghosh notes how the 20th century literary novel, unlike the storytelling that prevailed during earlier eras, emphasizes style, observation, character, and nuance of emotion. It's all about individual moral adventure and tends to be exceedingly narrow in scope. Plot and narrative have been relegated to the genres like romance, thrillers, and horror. If the author writes about climate change, it's science fiction. And who takes that seriously? Further expelled from this form of storytelling is any agency or intelligence that is not human. Nature is conceived of as static and passive. There are no catastrophes. The unthinkable is exiled from the stories altogether. All of this, Ghosh writes, makes climate change events peculiarly resistant to the customary frames that literature has applied to nature. They are too powerful, too grotesque, too dangerous, and too accusatory to be written about in a lyrical or elegiac or a romantic vein. Surely Ghosh overstates his case, you're thinking. Richard Powers' prize-winning novel Overstory comes immediately to mind, or Ministry of the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson. But in fact, it is well documented that during the fierce anti-communism following World War II, the CIA enlisted the famed Iowa Writers Workshop to promote fiction that championed American individualism and took as its subject matter the routines of everyday life. How the CIA accomplished this is beyond the scope of this review, but their success can be attested to by anyone who has taken a writing workshop in the past few decades. As Ghosh writes, it was exactly the period in which the human activity was changing the Earth's atmosphere that the literary imagination became radically centered on the human. In the second section of the book, Ghosh takes up the ideas of history, and in particular, as he puts it, the Western world's enormous intellectual commitment to the promotion of its supposed singularity. In this worldview, the countries of the global north were the ones with the ingenuity and energy to drive technological advance, which diffused outward to what they thought of as the lazy and stupid masses of the global south. That view ignores how colonization brutally repressed the modern development of the colonized. It was not until after World War II, when the colonized threw off their overlords, that we get the so-called Great Acceleration, or that rapid growth in human activity that drove a massive increase in development, energy use, and, of course, greenhouse gas emissions. So the fly in the ointment of modern liberation is the climate crisis. Within the constrained thinking of Western exceptionalism lies the idea that everyone across the globe could enjoy the fruits of capitalist consumerism. As one liberal diehard explained to me, he just wanted a world in which everyone could eat the occasional steak, drive an electric car, and fly off to the Caribbean islands once a year for a nice vacation. Global economic equality in the context of sustainable carbon emissions was his dream. Ghosh, however, cites evidence that worldwide economic equality that does not burn up the planet would require something like an 80 to 90% reduction in the expenditures of the wealthy industrialized nations. There goes your car and your vacation, not to mention your meat. Who in the global north is going to go for that? So the remedies for climate justice become truly unthinkable. In Ghosh's words, the universalist premise of industrial civilization was a hoax. That a consumerist mode of existence, if adopted by a sufficient number of people, would quickly become unsustainable and would lead literally to the devouring of the planet. In the final essay of the book, Ghosh turns to politics and what he calls the most important concept of the modern era, freedom. But non-human forces, he argues, have no place in the human project to free ourselves from injustice, oppression, and inequality. So it follows that freedom becomes a war on nature, an effort to free ourselves from material constraints. Here, you can think of the various far-fetched ideas to outrun our carbon emissions through technological inventions that let us keep on consuming. Coincident with this modern conception of freedom, Ghosh charts a failure of politics to effectively engage with climate change. Modern politics, he states, has devolved to fights over identity, has much more to do with individual human rights than promotion of the common good. Again, I think he overstates his case. Across the globe, resistance to the international corporate elite that perpetuates global roasting has grown remarkably. Yet the point is well taken when you look at fragmentation within the left and its tendency to devour its young. At exactly the time, Ghosh writes, when it has become clear that global warming is in every sense a collective predicament, humanity finds itself in the thrall of a dominant culture in which the idea of the collective has been exiled from politics, economics, and literature alike. Where then does Ghosh find hope and inspiration? In a very telling exercise, he meticulously compares the language of the Paris Agreement with Pope Francis's encyclical on climate change. It's prime evidence for his argument that humankind will find its salvation in the sacred, that nation-states with their narrow economic interests will not lead us out of our predicament, but rather a global and religiously inspired movement that draws on moral purpose to uplift the common good. Ghosh does not argue that all we have to do is see the coming catastrophe and we'll be saved. The structural forces that maintain humanity on a path to self-destruction are formidable and will require courage and determination and hard work to overturn. But changing course demands that we see clearly who we are and where we are headed. This is Patricia Kohlberg, and I've been sharing my thoughts about a very interesting and provocative book called The Great Derangement by environmentalist and novelist Amitav Ghosh.